spiritual opium. That's how the Chinese brand video games in the media. And after a tightening of the noose around the industry and rules at the start of the school year that limit screen time for teens, 3 hours a week, Fortnite announcing that it's folding. 3 years on, $1 billion spent. The popular survival game never got regulatory approval. This despite the financial backing of Chinese tech giant Tencent. What's the matter with Fortnite? More broadly, what's the matter with gaming? Just how addictive is it? How violent? We'll ask what happens during all that time spent in the virtual world and what it does to the human brain. In the case of China, are restrictions a response to thoughtful concern on the part of parents or helicopter parenting in a nation obsessed with good school results? Or could it also be part of a broader wariness by Chinese authorities who are conservative by nature, wariness of a youth culture in a world that escapes their control? Today in the France 24 debate, we're asking, are video games dangerous? And if so, to whom? With us, e-commerce entrepreneur Jun Yen is with us. Thanks for being with us here on France 24.
You're very welcome.
From the French port city of Marseille, Romain Sombret, co-founder of the MCES eSport Club. Thanks for joining us.
Nice to be with you again.
For the uninitiated, Romain, can you explain what an eSport Club is?
Any sport club is like exactly like the sport ecosystem. It's something you have professional players, you have sponsors, partners, you are traveling around the world to represent your brand, your club, etc. So more or less it's like sport, and I'm coming from sport, so I can make the comparison between both.
Yeah, and we see there are even entire sports channels devoted to gaming. We'll talk perhaps about it a little bit later on. And joining us from Ottawa, psychologist Rachel Coward, research director of the mental health support organization, Take This. Welcome to the show again.
Thanks for having me.
The France 24 debate, where you can join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter, hashtag F24debate. Your social network Weibo was alight on Monday. Chinese gamers bidding their adieu to Fortnite. Here's one of the messages. Friends who have played with me will meet again if fate decrees. More from Karis Garland.
It's game over for Fortnite as Chinese authorities maintain a tight grip on the digital and gaming sector. On Monday, the highly popular video game became inaccessible in China, with developer Epic Games shutting down servers. It comes 3 years after a test version of the action-packed shooter and world-building game was launched in the country, featuring differences in gameplay and graphics to meet local restrictions. But that wasn't enough for Beijing, which never gave the green light for a formal launch. The Communist Party has imposed several restrictions on the gaming industry. In August, authorities limited the time under 18s could spend gaming online to 3 hours per week, and only at certain times on certain days of the week. A broad crackdown in the last year has also affected the wider technology sector, with both economic and social objectives. In October, Microsoft said it was closing the Chinese version of LinkedIn, a career-orientated social network. While earlier this month, Yahoo announced it would also pull out of the country, citing an increasingly challenging business and legal environment.
So, Junyan, when the story breaks, many hear the sort of the gut reactions, oh, this is the Great Firewall of China, this is Big Brother. But when you look at the Chinese press last couple of days, mm-hmm. it's the parents who are asking for this. What's behind all of this?
Well, I think that parents are concerned that children are spending a lot of time on the screen, and they are addicted, and they are unable to cut it off. They're unable to return to their other activities. They're very distracted when they do. And I think parents are concerned. I, as a parent, am also concerned about the amount of screen time that my daughter is spending. So I think it is a concern for a lot of parents. And for some parents, I think it's a welcome move.
Rachel Coward, in the newsroom, there was more than one parent who said, why can't Emmanuel Macron be more like Xi Jinping on this one? What are your thoughts on this when you saw that Fortnite never got that green light and finally just threw in the towel?
Yeah, you know, I think they're selling this policy as child safety. And while this kind of policy might seem useful on the surface, it really doesn't reflect current theory and knowledge that we have about the prevention of problematic or disordered media use. You know, the research clearly points to the need to consider the disordered use of any media as a maladaptive solution to something else. So underlying stress or underlying depression or anxiety. So taking a global ban approach, it's not really considering, you know, the positives of games. We've heard over the last 2 years of the COVID pandemic how it's really been a boon for social connection, and it's just kind of ignoring all of that information.
Rachel, you wrote a piece in the Washington Post where you defended that point of view. You say you yourself have children. How much screen time do they have?
Yeah, it's a balance. So they definitely play games. I mean, my oldest is six, so she plays games. My other two are too young to kind of navigate that right now. But
so they're not teenagers.
They're not teenagers. No, they're young children.
It's a big difference, right? Because when you get to be a teen these days, it's very different from when I was a teenager.
Absolutely. But I think that the key point isn't so much government regulation on how we spend our time, but better media literacy on what games are and what they aren't. I think parents absolutely need smarter solutions for finding that balance between their children's digital and non-digital lives.
Romain Sombré, have you ever had a problem with one of your players playing too much?
Yes, of course. I will not be denying the problem, and we have the same kind of problem. I'm also a parent, and I had this kind of problem or management to make with my kids. I think I really believe that esports and gaming is a wonderful tool and a wonderful pretext. We need to move towards the new generation, understand how they play, why they play, because we don't understand in our generation why they spend as much time on video game. But I think we have to use video gaming to bring back to sport, bring back to school, bring back to culture, etc. But we cannot stop the phenomenon. It's a global and worldwide phenomenon, so we need to move towards.
How young or old are the players on your teams, Romain?
We have players from 13, so 13 years old players, professional players, means they are doing that aside the school, and we work a lot with the parents, with the mother, the father, of course. So it's also a way to be with them, because sometimes they are lost when the kids are becoming very good players and they are playing for professional teams. And it's between 13 and 25 years old, more or less. And we consider them as athletes. So we really manage their planning on a day-to-day, balancing the school, the sport, and the esports. And so I think this is the only solution, because we cannot fight against this video game passion, which is global, worldwide, and cultural.
So how many hours a day would a 13-year-old from your team be in front of a screen?
Yeah, when they get into the team, they are playing 2 hours maximum a day, but with a prepared session with our coaches, our managers. So it means it's not only playing video games, it's really training and finding the best solution to improve their performance, their skills. And they also do schools, of course. They go to schools and they do sports.
All right, so it's in a managed environment. Junyan, it sounds like the same thing as joining the chess club.
Well, yes, I think it's kind of joining the chess club, but then I think the screen also goes on after school. It doesn't just stop there. And when you're really engaged in a game, you really want to continue. It becomes addictive. Some people are addicted to chess, of course. Many of their aficionados, but not everybody is. I think what we're seeing is a phenomenon that is much bigger and very, very widespread. And it's really touching every child, a lot of children, and a lot of parents. It's a very, very big societal phenomena, not just a chess club for the few chess aficionados. So, and when I look at them playing video games, they're not moving. They're sitting there and they're glued to the screen. It's not physical. I understand that there are pros that video games can bring some advantages in terms of, you know, maybe coming up with solutions or bringing creative ideas, but too much is too much. And it's because it's addictive, of the addictive nature, it just makes the child wants to continue more and more and more and want to go back to it. So then you hear of kids hiding under the blanket, playing the video games under the blanket. They're going, you know, playing till very, very late at night. And I think that's what the Chinese government is concerned about. Kids playing till 4 in the morning, 6 in the morning, and then they can't do their schoolwork. I mean, they're not getting the education that they should be getting as a child when growing up. And they're spending all their waking hours doing something else. And I think that's what we're concerned about. It's not that, you know, I think some exposure and, you know, e-games is great, you know, strategies, but not too much.
Is there a specificity in China which for a long time had a one-child policy? So therefore, I know that education is everything there. It's very hard to get into university.
Yes.
The parents invest a lot in the kids. They're even more helicopter parents than in places like the U.S. Is that part of it? Is that the parents want control over the kids or want to make sure that the kids stay focused on their studies more? Is there a Chinese element to this? Is my question.
I think probably there is a Chinese element to it because you do see that Western countries don't take the same approach. And even though Western countries are, the parents are concerned, they don't necessarily, maybe they're not asking for the same thing. A lot of parents, I think in the West, there is an argument for more liberty and that parents should be making their own decisions. More than other parents who are asking the government to take a bigger stand. So maybe it is more of a Chinese phenomena where education is very important. I think that regardless of whether you're concerned about the child's education, you're also concerned about the child's upbringing. So it's not just, you know, that the hours spent on the video game is taken away from the studies, but it's the hours that you spend on the video games or on the screen are taken away from doing other good activities like sports, reading, or, you know, musical, singing or dancing. I think that's the concern. It's not balanced.
Rachel Cowart, do you agree that there is a concern if you spend all those hours in front of a screen?
Well, there's a lot to unpack. Of course, you shouldn't spend every moment in front of a screen. There's sedentary lifestyle. There's eye strain. There are, of course, things to consider. But, you know, as I was hearing the other panelists talking, I absolutely got in trouble for being under the blanket with the flashlight reading books, right? So I kind of feel like it's cyclical. If we're doing anything too much for too long, it's a problem. But in terms of addiction, I just want to be clear that the word addiction from a clinical sense is very different than the word addiction is commonly used from the public. Gaming disorder or gaming addiction is actually hotly debated within the scholarly community, and there's not a whole lot of evidence to support that games are inherently addicting. I know that the government called games the opium of the mind, and I'm sure that makes for, you know, a very nice headline, but video games' neurological response is not equivalent to what we're seeing for, you know, opium or methamphetamines. It's just not there. Are games fun? Of course. Are they engaging? They're designed to do that, but they're not classically addicting behaviorally or chemically.
My teenage son begs to differ. He admitted to me that it's addictive when you get points. Especially, we were talking about Fortnite specifically. He said when you get points, you have this sort of these nice graphics that show up. Rachel, he also said that you have this little rush each time, and that everything's encouraging you to stay on the game as long as possible.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, that's how good games are designed to keep us engaged. And that's why I mentioned earlier, I think it's really about having more of media literacy and understanding what are the strategies, what are the tools that I as a parent can use. I mean, I know my child is only 6, but trust me, she loves Minecraft. I've had to develop strategies to make sure that she's not playing it, you know, hour after hour every day.
All right. You wrote in your piece how, yes, Fortnite is addictive the way perhaps eating potato chips is addictive. Back in September, a clinic near Valencia, Spain, begged to differ, announcing the first certified case, it said, of a patient treated for Fortnite addiction. The 15-year-old had been a model student until he lost his mother and was playing up to 20 hours a day. Rachel Cowart, what was your reaction to that story?
Yeah, I mean, I think it said in the study already, I mean, it was being used as a maladaptive coping strategy for grief. I think that people can absolutely use games in ways that cause problems. I am not denying that in any way. The point is more that it's something underlying, right? So if you go to a clinician to seek help that my child is playing a lot of Fortnite every day, we're not treating by taking the games away, we're treating the underlying grief in this instance.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about the game itself, Romain Sombré. You're remote in Marseille, so I'll have to describe to you a bit what we're showing up here on the screen. Fortnite is technically called a shooter and world building game. So here we see players have to not just shoot at people, but also to build stuff as they go along. Is that how it works exactly?
Yeah, exactly. But the aim of the game is to go on an island. You have 100 people going on this island, and you need to be the last one to survive, let's say, like Koh Lanta in France, for example. So, yeah, it's this kind of game where you have shooting, in fact, and you also have team playing, because you often play by 2, 3, or 4 people. So it's not always individual. And what I like to say is that I agree with all what has been said from now until now, but the question is, how do we manage that? What do we do to try to maybe stabilize or structure a little bit the esport? And what we do and what we have shown in France is that we can attract people passionate by Fortnite and drive them back to traditional sport, bring them back to education. So it's a pure passion, we agree. It can be an addiction sometimes, of course, in any case. Even for ships, you can be addicted to ships. But it's a wonderful tool. It's a wonderful pretext to move towards this new generation, understand them, and try to use this passion for esports to go back to other traditional sports or cultural aspects.
How so? Because you heard Junyen say that she's worried about people sitting idle in front of their screen. What's the link between video gaming and actual sports?
What we are currently doing in 6 places in France, and we're going to develop this concept, is that we put gaming centers with PC and Fortnite coaches, and we play on this dream to become a Fortnite player that many kids will never be professional. We play on that, and on every Wednesday, every Saturday, during the holidays, we promote the 50-50 sport and esport academies, camps, and we attract kids that were not getting out from home because they love Fortnite. And then when they are in our camps, they can do sport and esports. So we can do things. We cannot only make a stake and say, okay, it's bad. We need to really do something, because I agree on some of the things that have been said, but we need to do something. So the question is, what do we do?
And have you had cases of players on your teams who just can't stop and who do wind up playing 20 hours a day? Is it because, have you been able to do what Rachel prescribed, which is treat underlying causes, Romain, when you find somebody is playing too much?
Yeah, we had some cases, not in the professional team, but in the academies. I was explaining the concept. We had some cases when the mother was coming and she was lost with the kids playing too much video game. After 6 months, the kid took confidence. He reduced sports, so he was better in his body, and the impact was very positive. So I agree, it happens in a lot of families and a lot of houses. But this kind of process, when we play on the patient of esports to bring back to sport, is really efficient, and this is what we really want to develop in the future.
Because in the case of that 15-year-old in Valencia, they had to basically put him in a clinic for several months to just get him out of his environment. Does it have to be that radical?
No, I don't think it has to be as radical, but I've never been in front of these kind of cases that I think are not the majority. The majority is what you said, that many kids are playing video games until 2 hours in the morning, and then they go to school, and it's not good. It's more, the problem is more on this point than the addicted people. It's more the global phenomenon. It's true. You have kids that play Fortnite until 2 hours in the night, and it's not good for the school. So the question is, how do we manage the balance of this lifestyle?
Rachel Cowart, there is a problem. I mean, we've had plenty of teachers on this show in the past telling us, kids who show up in class in the morning and who are exhausted, and not necessarily from playing video games, but just being in front of screens until very, very late.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been pretty well shown in the research that screens can disrupt our ability to naturally fall asleep. So it is absolutely about balance. It's about making sure that you have a cutoff at a certain time, whether it's the computer and the devices are only in public spaces in the house. I mean, there are different strategies depending on, you know, your children and your situation that can be used to try and mitigate the negative outcomes that may come out of it.
All right, so there's the question of how violent Fortnite is, and on this one, my teenage son disagreed. He said it's not. He said that even though you see there lots of shooting, there's no blood or realistic-looking figures that cry in anguish. I mean, I've seen other games like Grand Theft Auto where it looks, I find them appallingly violent. He has a point. It's not as violent. You agree on that point, Junyan?
Okay, I haven't played Fortnite myself. I've seen some of the screens. It's a lot of shooting, a lot of noise, a lot of destruction. And I just went for a few seconds and I was just like, oh. So it is true that it's not very realistic, but it is a lot of that, a lot of shooting and destroying for a lot of the time. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not a psychologist. You know, I can't say whether a child is able to disassociate from that because the characters are not realistic. But if they're looking and involved in that kind of activity most of the time, then that's taking away from the time that child could be reading something more interesting or more intellectual or more, you know, based on interactions between people. I mean, I think the concern there is that the amount of time that you're spending on there and the addiction. And I disagree a little bit with Rachel about trying to educate parents. I think we all try to educate ourselves, those who are concerned. But there are a lot of parents who don't have the background to educate themselves, who don't have the time to educate themselves, or don't want to. You know, it's something new to them and they're not really able to understand it. I have an engineering background. I understand most, you know, than probably more than other parents. But there, I discover photos of my daughter's friends and the parents are not aware. And when I call them up, they're completely in the dark. They don't know. And a lot of parents are in that situation. They don't want the kids to be addicted. They don't want the kids to be spending all their time. And they want to give the kids the choice and they want to give the kids the tools and let them make their own decisions. But I think that what we're seeing today is that the kids are not able
to
make that decision.
Junyan, is this the gripe of every generation from time immemorial? Or is there something very 21st century about this?
It's very different. I think that I've read reports where, you know, there's the video gaming, which has been, you know, going on for a while, but I think video games today are much more realistic than they used to be, much more sophisticated. And I think that they're able to, with the product developers, they're able to, and they employ psychologists to come up with methods to make the children want to play more and more. So they have methods, you know, the like buttons is on WhatsApp, but in the video games, I'm sure they also have other methods to try to hook the kids for longer times, because that's how they make money. And I think they've gotten to a level of sophistication much more than before. And social media, you know, similar to the Fortnite case, I think that is quite new. And the kids, you know, being hooked on social media, that is something that a lot of parents don't really understand. And they don't have that experience. And they're not able to deal with it. And so in some ways, you know, when you have a government, you know, I so many times I've tried to say, you know, and I've heard parents saying, we try to get we try to take the screens away, and the kids fight and they put up a fight and they become very upset. And after all this fighting, you know, parents get exhausted. Sometimes you just don't want to fight anymore. I know some parents who said, okay, we're going to form a coalition. We're going to be the non-screen parents. And one by one, they just drop like flies. They just can't resist. It's like a tsunami. And so in some ways, when the government just comes right out and says, well, you know, that's the rule. You're just not going to play, you know, you're only limited to 40 minutes a day of TikTok. I think that's what they're doing. Or 3 hours a week. It's taking the onus off the parents. So parents don't have to fight that fight anymore. Arguing with the kids, you know, it's not good for you. You know, we can try to tell them this is not good for you. I've shown them The Social Dilemma, the show on Netflix, why they're doing that. And you know, all the product developers from Twitter, from Instagram, they themselves said, we invented these tricks to trick the users. And we ourselves are victims of these same tricks. So, you know, my daughter agrees and understands. But then right after that, she goes, can I have the phone, please?
Right. We have,
you know, yeah.
Romain Sombré, we've had the visit just in the past week of the Facebook whistleblower, Frances Haugen, who's been denouncing exactly that, how Silicon Valley works on the tricks to keep us in front of the screen as long as possible. As somebody who has to work with, who works with those teenagers and also their parents, do you sense the same generation gap? And do you agree that parents just don't know what their kids are up to?
Yeah, I can understand that parents are a little bit lost with the phenomenon, but I guess it was the same when TV arrived in the house in the 60s or before. I mean, it's. I think it's a generation problem. We don't understand what's happening, why our kids are playing these games. And I think there are very positive things also in video games, like development of soft skills, empowerment, leadership. You can learn a lot of things. You have people and friends around the world. You can make a lot of things around video gaming. So I understand all the debate around that, but I'm quite sure that this kind of debate, we already had that when TV arrived or cinema arrived, because when I was young, you were talking about violence. When I was young, I was going to cinema to see Rambo, Sylvester Stallone, Rocky. It's violent. I mean, I think we over understand the problem, and we should also, in our side, and people from my generation and our generation, let's say, try to understand why they like it and the benefits also from video gaming. It's not so bad, so black. We just need to make a move towards new generation again and understand why they play so much and why they develop this kind of game. Of course, the publisher, they want to do money, like the TV show. They want to keep you in front of the TV. And we are this generation in front of the TV. When you are in front of the TV, you are totally passive. When you are in front of video games, you are doing things, you are developing your brain, you know. So I would not be as negative as what I've heard there.
Rachel Coward, you wrote in your piece how there's the element of escape, which is needed and necessary in those games for all teenagers.
Absolutely. And you know, I think it is a cyclical moral panic, as we just heard. We saw it with television and with rock and roll and with comic books and now with video games. You know, I can sit and binge watch The Witcher on Netflix, which I did recently, and it's not a problem. But if I spend, you know, those 10 hours playing Fortnite, all of a sudden it's a problem. So I think it's just the way that we are approaching this newish technology. I mean, it's not actually quite new anymore, but it's the newest in a long line of, you know, kind of scapegoats for all of society's ills.
Okay, let me ask you. Sorry to interrupt, Rachel. Let me ask you, because I know you wrote that you yourself like to play games. When you sit in front of a game for 10 hours, what is your behavior like afterwards? Are you interacting with other human beings in the same manner? Or is your behavior, shall we say, a little bit altered?
I have lots of children now, so I haven't done that in a long time. But if we look at the research in terms of how media impacts our behavior, it's negligible. If you consider other aspects of our lives. So we talked about violence earlier, and there's a lot of talk oftentimes about playing violent video games and being aggressive or violent in real life. Well, if you look at the research and you account for things like peer delinquency and previous exposure to violence and lower tolerance for frustration, the effects of media disappear. And all of these other kind of demographic factors have far more influence on our thoughts and our behaviors. So, I mean, I probably have a stiff back probably if I sat for 10 hours, but it wouldn't have any long-term impact on my behavior.
Junyen, what's your personal experience on this matter?
Well, I think that we are seeing that the kids are very distracted when they're hooked to the screens, and they.
So are the parents, by the way.
Yeah, the parents as well. Yeah, and you know, there is that dinner table phenomenon where people are looking at their phones, and we try to have that rule. But I think the teachers and the parents are noticing that once the kids start to get onto the screens, they get very distracted. They can't concentrate as much with doing their work. The attention span shortens a lot more. And I think there is an impact. I mean, I myself, when I played video games many years ago, I just feel like when you finish, you're a little bit like a zombie. You're like in another world and you kind of get to switch out a little bit. So there is a bit of a disconnect, I think. And I do think that some video games are good. It's just when it's too much and the kids are really too much addicted to it, it becomes a problem.
It becomes a problem. And back in this, we were talking earlier, but you were saying about how with parents overwhelmed, the state stepping in China at the start of the school year, it wasn't just Xi Jinping thought inserted into school curriculums. There was that ban on gaming on weekdays, 3 hours online a week for video games, and the limit on video gaming for young people. Romain Sombré, your reaction to that? I mean, when you read that story, the bringing in the state, and again, this was a move that was applauded by parents in China.
Yeah, I understand the move. The China's way is not possible to do the same in Europe, the same in France. But I understand the problem again. And what we think that we need to find smart ways to use this passion for esports to bring the people to all aspects of the life. And we agree on that. So my point is that I agree we cannot forbid video gaming in France or in Europe. It's not the way our society is organized, so it's not possible. We have to find smart ways to use the esport as a pretext or video gaming as a pretext, as a tool to make a more balanced way of playing. But I've not been surprised because I've seen a lot of things coming from China and South Korea where players are absolutely addicted to video games and the industry, the esport industry, because if they are addicted, it's because they want to become professional. And the esport industry is not structured enough. There is no federation. Government are not understanding what's happening. So I was not surprised, but I think it's not the way we can do that in France. So we have to find a French way to manage and balance video gaming in our own style.
And if I hear you correctly, what you're saying is that French way could be, I wouldn't say regulate, but at least put it within the framework of having, organized leagues and competitions.
Exactly. We need to structure the leagues, the competition, and we need, and this is the way we are trying to push at the government level. We need to work with the sport federation to propose and implement esports gaming centers in any clubs, any sports clubs, and propose, 50-50 activities. Because if not, we are going to lose a full generation of kids that are going to stay at home playing video games, not getting out, etc. So we think that we can do a very smart way and use this passion.
Rachel Coward, what do you think of the French way as described there by Romain?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I just genuinely believe that regulating what our children do is something that should happen in the house with the parents versus it being kind of governmental regulation. And in terms of, the gamer stereotype of overweight, lonely, addicted, again, I mean, I guess coming back to the research, not surprising because I am a research psychologist, it just doesn't support it. It's just a stereotype. And of course, there will be outlying cases, absolutely. And some people use it problematically. But to just blanket statement over the billions of people who play games, you're just completely disregarding the overwhelming evidence that games can have a positive influence and a balanced space in our lives as children through adolescence and adults, because the average gamer is 30.
The average gamer is 30. Junyan, now that brings us back to China. And let me ask you about this, because this suspicion of video gaming is not new in China. Right. It's existed for a long time. Authorities have always regarded with suspicion video games, even though the Chinese are very good at it and it's a huge market. Why is that?
Why is there
this suspicion by authorities of video gaming?
Well, I think that maybe the phenomena is much bigger than before. And maybe coupled with social media, it's becoming a huge phenomena that they, you know, the government feels like they need to take action. I don't know how it compares to many years ago, whether the phenomena is really much, much worse. But in general, I think that...
Is it a problem also of a generational problem? I know that a lot of parents in China want to revert back to Confucian learning, respect for the elders, respect for the older generation. Here, I mean, this youth culture that you have, this ecosystem, when you're video gaming and you're talking amongst yourselves, well, there's no parents in the room. So it gets beyond the control of not just authorities, but also parents.
Yeah. I think there could be some aspect of that where parents are losing control. But I also want to point out that they use the word opium. And I think the opium war is something that is very painful.
And the opium wars was something instigated by the West. Is there the feeling that this is something that's foreign, that's being brought in?
Right, or just the fact that it destroyed the country. And if you have a population of people who are addicted to something and not learning, not training, not educating themselves, then your country is doomed.
Romain Sombré, I know that at the top level you have gamers who are good at Fortnite from around the planet. But at, shall we say, the amateur level, many here defer to people from Asia, from the Far East, saying, "Wow, they're really good." Are there different characteristics to players? Do the way people play, is it different where you are on the globe? The way it is different when you play, say, soccer.
Yeah. There are some different styles between the region, and to be honest with you, South Korea and China was at the top, is still at the top of the esports professional scene as of today, because they play too much. So we are not surprised with what's happening in China, because we know that they train maybe 15 hours a day, so it's too much. So the way we train the teams is different. The way we play is different. It's a different style, exactly like in soccer, for example. I would say South Korea would be the Brazilian, because they have a lot of talents and the ecosystem is really developed, and China is also full of talents. But the way we play in Europe is a little bit different, and there are some games where European players are better than US one or Chinese one or Asian one. Yeah, it's exactly like in the sport. There are some building characteristic in different scenes.
And Rachel Cower, your thoughts on this, this question of the generation gap that's showing through in this discussion. Is this about control and whether or not you can control your youth?
Yeah, but you know, as parents, we're supposed to relinquish control of it the older that they get. I think there's a lot of concern. There's a fear of the unknown, which is totally understandable and totally normal. And I have it, as I mentioned, my daughter plays Minecraft. I don't. It's very unknown, and there's a fear there. But I think that rather than just ignoring it and saying, I'm afraid, I'm just going to not let them engage, I think it's about being engaged and being intentional as a parent to take time and see, okay, how can I put restrictions on time or on age rating of games or what kind of content that they're consuming? Because as has been mentioned multiple times on this panel, it's a $1 billion industry. Games are not going anywhere. So I think the onus is on us to kind of inform, what are our children engaging in? Why are they engaging in it? There's a lot of information out there freely available all over the internet. And how can we, you know, harness it in our house as a tool for connection and conversation instead of constant conflict?
All right. A formidable challenge, Dr. Rachel.
<Yes. laughs>
Dr. Rachel Coward, I want to thank you so much for joining us from Ottawa. I want to thank Romain Sombré in Marseille. Yep. Jun Yen, thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.